Welcome to the Union for Reform Judaism's Parenting Podcast. I'm Wendy Grinberg, Parenting Specialist. Today, I'm talking about resilience with Dr. Ken Ginsberg, a pediatrician specializing in adolescent medicine at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and an associate professor of pediatrics at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. He is also the author of Building Resilience in Children and Teens, Giving Kids Roots and Wings, published by the American Academy of Pediatrics. In this final segment, we learn about peer pressure and a secret code you can use with your teen.
You talk about a couple strategies that maybe you could explain here, earned freedoms and nightly check-ins.
Earned freedoms is the strategy of how you discipline a kid. You want a kid to have more and more opportunities for independence, but you want them to be ready. So you give them more and more privileges, but they have to demonstrate competency. They have to demonstrate responsibility. And when they do that, you create a situation where kids will want to behave well because they're getting something out of it. Similarly, when they don't behave well, you don't punish them by taking away things or you know, grounding them for months and months. You just withdraw the privileges to the point that they were able to handle. And that way they'll really understand that they are in control of both their freedoms and their consequences. The other thing that you spoke about, as our kids are navigating the world and they're going to be going out and they're going to be spending more and more time with peers, they're going to be exposed to a lot of peer pressure. Peer pressure is not usually a kid threatening another kid or saying you'll be a loser if you don't do that. It's much, much more subtle than that. It's really about the fact that every kid wants to feel normal. So a lot of peer pressure is actually internally driven. But at the same time, you have kids who have good values and who understand that sometimes what their peers are doing isn't right. So you have kids torn in two directions. One, by what they think is right, which hopefully they've learned from you. And two, by what their friends want to do, and they're feeling really confused. So we can talk till we're blue in the face to kids, telling them what to do and what are good values, and they'll understand, and they'll agree with you, and they don't think you're an idiot, but they still won't do it. They won't do it if they are not able to save face with friends and still fit in with them. One of the best strategies, which I always say comes from Jewish mothers everywhere, but definitely came from my mother, which goes like this: just blame me. Tell him your mother said no. So let me give you two specific strategies that you can use to do this. The first is the check-in rule. You know, when your kids are little, you put them to bed by reading a book and maybe by doing prayers and maybe by giving a bath and brushing their teeth, and you have this whole ritual. And then suddenly your kids become teenagers and they can kind of just sneak in at the end of the night. There's no good night rituals. There have to be good night rituals. I don't care if your kid is staying out till 2 in the morning, and I don't care if you're in bed. You still have to have them come in to sit on your bed and to say, I love you. And you have to have the opportunity to say, I love you. How was your day? Do you need me for any reason? First of all, this creates a great opportunity for communication because, unfortunately, that's when kids sometimes have their most intense thoughts and feelings. But it also means that when they're out with their friends and their friends are passing around a joint, they can say, are you kidding? My mom smells me. I can't get away with anything. And it allows them to police themselves while saving face. The next technique is code word. And I'll tell you that of everything I've ever written in any of my books or any talks I've ever given, this is the one thing that is so darn simple that parents will write back to me and say, you saved my child's life. I want every family to have an understanding of either a phrase or a word that when it's slipped into a conversation, it means I'm in trouble, get me out of trouble. So take, for example, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. It's a great contract. It says, I don't want to drink and drive. If I am ever with a friend, however, who does, or if I find myself drunk, I will call my mother. She says, if you do that, I'll be proud of you. I won't punish you, and there'll be no questions asked, but we can talk about it in the morning. It's a lovely contract. But now imagine five kids hanging out. Are they really going to say, you know what, fellas, you're misbehaving, and I'm going to call my mom.
I signed a contract.
Yeah, you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it. But how's this? Mom, Ken, Bills, yeah, it's okay. Well, not fun. No, we're doing trigonometry homework. No, didn't get a chance to walk Spotty. Just let him up back, and I'll take him around when I get home, I promise. Or I'll take him for a long walk in the morning. But the code, did you hear a code in there?
Spotty,
exactly. and then she says, where are you? I'm coming to get you. And then the kid hangs out the phone and goes, my mother's such a, you know, I got to go. And if he can't get home because there's no subways in town or there's no way to get home safely, then he just does what a 16-year-old does. He yells back, don't tell me what to do. I'm going to college in a year and a half. Don't tell me what to do. And she says, where are you? I'm coming to get you right now. And by the way, I'll take your friends home too.
Yeah, I read a letter on a parenting blog recently where the mother said, I can't trust my daughter anymore since I caught her with some alcohol in her backpack, and now, you know, she won't talk to me anymore because I'm rummaging through her stuff all the time. And that sort of broke my heart. What I love so much about this strategy is you're saying, I got your back. I understand you're going to be in a tough situation.
If you understand what the fundamental question of adolescence is, which is, who am I? And then the side question that goes along with that is, am I normal? Being normal takes on such a huge, huge place in the mind of an adolescent that anything they do that's going to make them seem like a freak compared to their friends undermines their sense of stability in the world. And it is that big a deal. And if I could comment on one thing that you made me think of, Wendy, for the mother who's lost trust in her child and who therefore is checking her bags every moment of every day, there's a danger zone here. I understand the mother's instinct and the mother's instinct to protect the child, but the danger here is that the child will think she has nothing else to lose, that the mother's perception of her is so changed that she's already a bad kid. And that is going to be so damaging to that child. So what I would say to that family is that you need to have the opportunity to fall back in love again and to regain trust. Certainly, that kid needs to be monitored more. No question about it. But I would, rather than have the whole relationship being about emptying backpacks, take a little vacation. If you can go to the Caribbean, that's great. But how about going to the park? How about, what is it that the two of you always did that was just fun? And have some time where you're just spending good, fun time together. Not talking about school, not talking about drugs, not talking about boys, just having fun. Fall back in love. The boy with the earring in his earlobe that's like 4 inches long is the same little boy that ran up and down the street and said, daddy's home, daddy's home, daddy's home. We have to remind ourselves that it's the same person, just at a different phase in life. In order to be resilient, kids need to know that there's an adult who believes in them unconditionally and who holds them to high expectations. And for the mother who found the drugs in her child's knapsack or the alcohol, you have to maintain that high expectation, that continued high expectation. As soon as you begin to thinking, oh, she's a bad kid, she's already lost.
Is there advice you would give yourself looking back on your earlier years as a parent?
I actually think I've been a very good dad. I think that if I had to do things over, it wouldn't be about my interactions with them. It would be about me and perhaps my interactions with my wife. I'm very, very, very busy. And what I'm really, really good at is always finding the time for my own children. And I think I've made the mistake of assuming that my wife will understand. She understands how busy I am. I don't have to explain to her in that way. And so I kind of save that special time more for the kids than for my wife. And I think that that's, first of all, clearly a mistake in marriage. I think that's obvious enough. I actually think it's a mistake in parenting. Because remember, what we're trying to do is raise kids to be, you know, your goal really is not to raise a healthy or a happy 5-year-old or even a successful 17-year-old who's going to get a fat envelope from a certain college. That's not your goal. Your goal is to raise someone who's going to be a happy, healthy, well-balanced 35-year-old, 40-year-old, 50-year-old. That's your goal. And that's all about how we model things. So I have not balanced my life well in that way and therefore have made a parenting error.
Thank you for listening to the Union for Reform Judaism's Parenting Podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast, find more resources, including links and discussion guides, and let us know what you think at urj.org/parents.